It's a very good medium, the idea that you're using both graphic and written together. I mean, this goes back to the oldest form of writing, into hieroglyphics, into cave paintings. So it makes sense that somebody in the modern era would also be using the same technique because it is amazingly effective.
But it didn't stop there.
No.
There are some firsts in when it comes to putting Negroes, African Americans, blacks in comics.
Yep.
And I'm sure DC and Marvel, the big comic book companies, were treading carefully.
Everyone knows the first comic book that hit it really big was Superman in 1939, Batman 1940s. But in 1939 also, first black hero in a comic book, The Red Mask. And that's a rare comic book to find. I just bought one. Please don't ask me how much. My wife might hear this. And it was really interesting in that he was an African prince and an adventurer. And he rescues a white woman from an evil white guy. But here's the thing that happened. In the very second issue, he's a white guy now, no longer a black guy.
This is The Red Mask in 1939?
Absolutely. And it's a very rare comic book to find. I'm very lucky. The word is there's not more than 20 in circulation anymore.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man,
Professor William Foster from Naugatuck Valley Community College in Waterbury, Connecticut. Mm. He is in Denver with his traveling exhibit called The Changing Image of Blacks in Comics, showing through February 28th at the Blair Caldwell African American Research Library on Welton here in Five Points, Denver, Colorado. We are tracking the movement of blacks through the world of comics. How about Marvel? When did they bring an African American in, DC or Marvel? When did the two big comic companies bring in African-American characters?
I'm glad you asked me that question. It just so happens that when Marvel was still timely back in the 1940s, moving into the 1950s, they had a black prince called Dweku. And he kind of predates the Black Panther in 1966. He is a sympathetic character. He's trying to be sure he is protecting his people against the mindless and greedy white hunters of the treasure of the tribes. Somewhat typical, but also somewhat in the front. He was a lead character. And also there was a lead female character in the stripper, too. This was Stan Lee, back in the early days of Timely. And then, of course, like I said, 1966, you get the Black Panther, who is African. Always that subtle distinction.
The African prince.
Yeah. And the head of one of the richest countries in Africa, and they are the only place where you can find vibranium. And they had never been conquered by colonialists, was one of the things that they started. And then when Brother Hedlund from BET, President of BET.
Oh, Reginald
Hedlund. When he wrote the new book when they brought it out like 2 years ago. That was the biggest point. And a lot of people couldn't, and they showed how other nations were always trying to control their wealth.
Mm-hmm.
What they've done with the Black Panther now, I don't know. They're still working it out. I'm going to give them a chance, see what they do.
What about DC?
First black character. Okay, now you're making me tell the truth. Actually, it would be John Stewart, the Green Lantern.
The Green Lantern. Was white.
Hal Jordan
mm-hmm. died?
No, well, you know how comic books
go. Well, comic books, you never really die.
That's true.
Or you die
as long as you make money for me, you're not really dead.
Yeah, you can die 1,000 times in comics.
Neil Adams, when I met him in person in 1986, I was on an exhibit in New York, but he told me at that point how John Stewart came about. He said
he was the creator of Green Lantern for DC.
Yep.
Okay.
And he said that they were looking for another replacement Green Lantern, and they wanted to have a blonde guy. He said, look, we go through this all the time, guys. We're in New York City. Come with me. He said he took him to the window. The editor looked out the window and said, what do you see? He said, you see people of every ethnicity represented. Please don't make another white guy superhero when we have a chance to do something really dynamic. He said he and the artist, and he and the writer and the artist, they had to work extra hard to get this character to be somebody non-white. And it turned out to be a wonderful, I mean, he's one of the few surviving Green Lantern replacements. I mean, you have the others, but the idea was, if you see on that same cover, you see he's not wearing a mask, and Hal Jordan is. And they made him a tough guy. They made him on an edge guy. He said, I'm not wearing a mask. Look at me, how black I am. Who's not going to know it's me? You know, which really kind of edgy talk in the 1960s, and that was one of the first characters.
Hollywood has discovered the superhero. And There are a couple of superheroes that have shown up in this the superhero genre. There are some that maybe aren't so well known.
War Machine would be one.
War Machine?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Missed it.
Iron Man.
Oh, of course. Okay. All right. I was thinking of
the Falcon?
The side character in The Incredibles, voiced by Samuel L. Jackson, who says, "Where's my super suit? Have you seen my super suit?" And he lost his super suit.
Is it Free Zone so or Frozone?
Will Smith played
the bad behaving black superhero.
Yeah. John Hancock.
All you need is two geeks together, brother. We'll work it out.
What a great name.
He was overdue to play a superhero. Really?
Will Smith?
Yeah.
Well,
Mr. Summer Festival guy, you know.
Sure.
I never lost you a dollar kind of guy. He was overdue to do a superhero.
There's a lot of mix between comics and sci-fi. They all sort of roll together, you know, because he played the guy with the dog in New York.
I Am Legend. And he was better than Charlton Heston. I got to tell you, I loved him better.
But not better than Vincent Price.
No.
Let's go on. Let's find some more. Storm was written as a non-white character when the X-Men was first developed.
When they were thinking about her, she was part of the new international X-Men, so which included the Steel guy from Russia, and it also included Kurt, who was the Nightcrawler, and also included the guy from Japan and the Native American guy. So she was a part of the new international X-Men that came out in 1975. But you're right. When she first was conceived, it was like years earlier than 75. And she was conceived almost as a cat-like creature. One of John Byrne's earlier photographs of her in some of the earlier books when they show about how they developed her. But there are people who still don't realize that she's black. You know, that because her story's been told several times. One is, and the last one that I caught up with was her father was African-American and her mother was African. So, yeah.
So as comic books go on, they begin to tell the backstory and they develop stories. That's the way comics are. You can develop a backstory later.
Or change a story.
Okay. And you can even change a story, okay.
Stop and think about Batman, Superman. You know, first of all, Superman's the only person from Krypton. Then, of course, there's Supergirl. Then there's villains from the Twilight Zone, the Phantom Zone, and then you
the dog.
Yeah, then you got Crypto. Then you got Super Monkey. Then you got Super Horse, Super Cat. You know, so it was like over time, it just got to be ridiculous. I mean, everybody was showing up. You know, from Krypton. You know, oh by the way, you knew there were black people on Krypton, right?
No,
on the Isle of the Blacks, Valthos, in the map they showed of Krypton back in the late '60s, early '70s, blew my mind. Black people on Krypton. And now I understand, but only because I don't read the stories of the city of Kandor, you know, being brought to real size and other Kryptonians landing on Earth. Now they have stories that feature African-American, well, not African-American, black people from Krypton as super beings.
And this is in the DC versions of its various versions of Superman.
Absolutely. And even in the 52s, they include them, the new 52s. Who knew?
One of the things that makes comics stand out are you know muscular presentations. These are artists first of all,
sure.
And they want to draw anatomy. They want to depict strength.
Absolutely.
So they're going to be strong.
Mm.
So multi-ethnic, really strong superheroes. Was in your opinion, Professor, was that somewhat threatening to Madison Avenue and the publishing world, to the comic book industry?
It's a real funny thing. Is that if you tolerate prejudice, stereotypes, anybody who wants to, you know, to have an appreciation, listen, we need to do something different, is looked at as an outsider, and this is something we can't do. And it's usually couched in terms of commerce. We'll lose this market. We can't sell these books here. This will just be, you know, this will depress sales. We'll never get them back, sort of thing. It's like when in the play Raisin in the Sun, where the black family wants to move into the white neighborhood, and instead of looking at it as personal or human rights, we're looking at it as property values. And that view is projected among others. So the idea that there were people absolutely threatened by the idea of black people being equal in comic books, even now. When the first comic book by an African American, written and produced by an African American, was produced in 1947, All Negro Comics, Ori Evans out of Philadelphia, former newspaper man. People just, I mean, and even black people wouldn't buy the book, you know, because they're part of that same brainwashing that everybody is. Well, this will be horrible, you know, we don't need to see that. We need uplifting values of our people. Whatever excuse will do. The idea is that I'm a young boy. I've started reading comics in the 1960s. I love Superman and Batman, but wouldn't it have been special if I saw somebody having those same values, those same powers, those same responsibilities who looked like me, and I never saw them. The function of comic books, as in anything else in media, it has two functions. One is to project the world that we live in, and or to project a positive future we could be in. And here's the thing that gets me. Talking about movies, and you were, when they have a character that had been white in the comic books and they make them black, and this is not on you or me because we don't play this, the geek boy hate response went up 1,000%. How dare you make the, you know, the Kingpin a black guy? How dare you make this, you know, the octopus and the spirit a black? Really? It's fantasy.
Wasn't Alfred Molina a fantastic octopus in Spider-Man?
Please.
What a performance.
And you have to love it. But there are people who, for whatever reason, don't think of that as being incongruous, the idea that you accept certain fantasy concepts but not others. You know, now they have Superman from Earth 23 who looks like Obama.
From Earth 23.
Oh, dude. Well, that's the wonderful thing about having parallel worlds. You can do whatever you want.
We are deep into sci-fi and the comic book culture with Professor William Foster, whose exhibit, The Changing Image of Blacks in Comics, is running through the end of February at the Blair Caldwell Library. You know, people only recently maybe are taking comics serious as a real financial force in Hollywood. Is there other significance in the storytelling that goes on with comics?
Thank you for asking that. The two books that I've written about this, one is called Looking for a Face Like Mine. Another one is Dreaming of a Face Like Ours. The idea is that how important is it to a young person to see themselves as that powerful being? The experiment that was done by Dr. Clark with the two baby dolls, one white and one black, and they're still doing that experiment, and black kids are still picking the white doll. Where people want to deny that's possible, oh, this couldn't be true anymore, we all said everybody accepts you. Well, maybe they're getting the other message. And the idea is that wouldn't it be special if we could all see ourselves in those roles? A lot of folks don't get it. Oh, it's not important. Well, it's not important because it's not important to you now, but one day it might be. On the other side of the coin, there are people who think that if they saw their kids see a black superhero, they won't see themselves. Wait a minute. You just said that wasn't important. And I think for young kids, it'd be great to see themselves in positive role models. The example I use is I used to work for Weekly Reader, and we had a guide for images in the book. And one of the first things it said in there, if a young girl who is really good at mathematics is reading books and stories and accounts and even examples on tests where no one is ever a woman doing important stuff, surely that message gets across to her. And that needs to be adjusted and corrected. That's our responsibility as an educational press. I say we all have a piece of responsibility about that.
Let me ask you if you think comic books are at that level with young readers and with the way that it influences the entertainment and the fantasy world, perhaps a canary in the coal mine, an indicator of how we handle our dreams for the future.
Absolutely.
Our image of ourselves.
No question. And it's an important message. I know that people say, well, kids don't read anymore. They're all on the electronic media. Somebody, and a bunch of somebody, because the sale of books hasn't disappeared, is encouraging their young people. My mother tells me I looked at pictures before I could read. That's not the first time I've heard that story. I know young kids who just, they want to be into it. There's something to absorb, and they're right on top of it. Now, here's the other side of midnight. If you don't encourage your kids to read, if you don't read to them and ask yourself honestly when's the last time you did, then what do you say about the importance of reading? I teach college students, and I can't tell you the hoops I have to go through to ensure that they're reading, that somehow they think they can get by without it. This is how we as humans, stories are how we learn knowledge. It never gets old and it never gets unimportant.
Professor William Foster III, the exhibit, The Changing Image of Blacks in Comics at the Blair Caldwell Library through February 28th. Thank you, Professor Foster.
My absolute pleasure, my brother.